The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Here's a quote. Even if the US president is an idiot, he is still the most powerful man in the world. Now, that is not a comment about today's incumbent, but rather the need to respect the power of the office. And the man who said it was the late Sean Lamass, former Taoiseach. And I want you to listen to him now describing an encounter he had with the US President John F. Kennedy. You'll have to forgive the quality of the ancient audio.
There was a certain reservation in his attitude, which you could notice. I mean, there was a mind working away behind the outward facade of the charming personality that you could detect was working, but you didn't know how it was producing. Kennedy's eyes were almost expressionless. Even when he was joking and laughing, this didn't reflect itself in his eyes. And when he was, in any other way, he was what I call button eyes, you know what I mean? They were there all the time, you see, and you knew that even when he was making a joke, even when he was laughing, even when he was making humorous speech, that there was a cold calculation of the effect of what he was doing upon you.
A cold calculation of the effect, even in his jokes, the effect he was having on you. Now, Sean Lamass was a leader who believed in decisive action. He wasn't afraid to provoke in the pursuit of progress. I'm joined now by Ronan McGreevy to talk about his book, Sean Lamass, The Lost Memoir. It's, a reconstruction of Lamass's own voice drawn from some 22 hours of recordings, and it shows the thinking, the contradictions, and the legacy of the man who, I think it's fair to say, did reshape modern Ireland. Ronan, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Happy Easter to you and your listeners.
And to you too. Now, let's talk about, first of all, how the book came about and where those tapes languished.
So, between 1967 and 1969, Sean Lamass recorded 23 interviews with a man by the name of Dermot Ryan, who was a businessman. He was a member of the Fianna Fáil National Executive, and he was a big fan of Sean Lamass's. Ryan's intention was to produce a book which would be Lamass's own take on his extraordinary life from Lamass's point of view. In other words, his memoir. And they ended up with 22 hours of recordings and 270,000 words, but between the jigs and the reels, it never happened. In 2018, Dermot Ryan handed the tapes over to the Lamass family. They approached me about doing something in the Irish Times. We produced a supplement. Then the Lamass family handed the tapes and the transcripts over to UCD in 2018. And I said, after the Irish Times supplement came out in the Irish Times in 2018, that I would return to this in book format at some stage. And here it is.
Now, what I found interesting in reading the book, and I would advise people to listen if they can online, you can find bits and pieces of Lamass speaking, because when you transpose the voice that you hear into what I read on the printed page, it is so authentic. You can actually, in reading the book, you can hear the man.
You can, and he had a remarkable fluency in the English language.
He did go to O'Connell Schools.
My
old school.
If you look, if you read that description you had of John F. Kennedy at the start when he talked about the coldness of his eyes, etc., and expressionless eyes, he's like a novelist. And, you know, he would have made a fantastic writer as well. He had an ability to say things in a really pithy and straightforward manner. He was a brilliant communicator, I think, and that showed it.
Let's talk about the Lamasses. Who were they? Because it's an unusual name.
Well, Sean Lamass said himself that he never knew anybody outside his own family with the same surname as himself. And, of course, he had that in common with De Valera. So it is, I suppose, one of the many ironies of Irish history that De Valera and Lamass, which are two of the most famous names in Irish politics, are not of Irish origin. It would appear that the Lamasses were French Huguenots who came here in the 18th century, although the trail runs cold. We first encountered them in the early 19th century. We think it may be a corruption of the name Lamastre, which is very common in the west of France where the Huguenots come from. Of course, the Huguenots were Protestants, French Protestants who fled France for Ireland. So they must have converted to Catholicism somewhere along the line.
Now, some of the things that are lesser known about him, but known nonetheless, he shot his younger brother by accident, his younger brother Herbert.
He shot dead his younger brother by accident in January 1916 at the family home in No. 2 Capel Street. An extraordinary thing to have happened, and one that was effectively covered up for nearly 100 years. It actually appeared in some of the newspapers at the time that he had shot dead his brother. The inquest hearing appeared in a number of newspapers, and yet it appears to have been completely wiped from the public memory and was only rediscovered by accident in 2013 by Professor Eunan O'Halpin, who was looking for something else. He was looking for some fatalities in 1916. So Herbert Lamass, his name was not even put on the gravestone in Glasnevin Cemetery until 2016.
Now, the extraordinary thing about the Lamass family, there was another Herbert Lamass who was actually killed in the Battle of the Somme.
That's right.
So you had these different threads running through that family.
Yeah, well, his family were actually, in the pejorative term, Castle Catholics in a lot of ways. His uncle was the head of the Board of Education in Ireland for Dublin Castle, and he had two cousins who fought in the First World War. One, another Herbert Lamass, was killed at the Battle of the Somme in August 1916.
Now, Lamass himself, he was a dyed-in-the-wool Republican. He volunteered at a very early age.
I 16,
mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, incredibly young. If we move forward, he was involved in Bloody Sunday in the in the assassination of a British agent, which wasn't always spoken about or even confirmed.
Well, he's always very, very tight-lipped about this sort of thing, but really, I have it from the horse's mouth that he was involved in the assassination of Geoffrey Bagley, because he mentions it in a handwritten note in his pension file, and this is corroborated by the evidence of the two men who were with him that day.
So he was involved in that. I'm just trying to get a portrait of the man, because he becomes a very different man.
Yes.
I mean, even though his older brother Noel, who might have been the star of the family, even though he was killed by Free Staters, he didn't kind of hold it against those people ultimately.
Yeah, well, by the time Sean Lamass had entered politics in 1923, he had killed two people, basically. His own brother had been killed. He had witnessed so many of his friends and been killed in either the War of Independence or the Civil War, and he had spent two periods in jail. I mean, he had already lived a life before he went into politics. So he goes into politics then, and he's... he realizes that dwelling on the past is never, ever going to work. And it's one of the consistent things about his political career was he did not hark on back on the past. He wanted to move forward.
He wasn't even entirely 100% as to which side he would be on at the treaty.
Yeah, he was always a pragmatist. And in fact, he was one of the main founders of Fianna Fáil in 1926 over the issue of whether they should go into the Dáil Éireann or not. But there was a sense that he was kind of on the fence about whether to support the treaty or not. But Lamass being Lamass, he decided not to support the treaty and went all in with the anti-treaty side.
Now, his political life then, during the war, he was what? Minister for Supplies,
that's right. Yeah.
Now, what did that involve?
It was probably a role that could have made him the most hated man in Ireland had he not carried it out properly. He was basically in charge of everything from turnips in your trousers to the supply of tea, wheat, basic commodities like that. He had very overarching powers in all of that. He could decide who was to get the petrol rations, how much people were to get. He was known as Half Ounce Lamass because he had to ration the tea, etc. So he was Minister for Supplies during the Second World War. He kept the country going. It could have destroyed his political career. It could have made him the most hated man in Ireland. But he was regarded as being firm but fair.
Now, he had a mantra about making a decision, and it's almost irrelevant whether you agree with that decision or not. The thing is to make it.
Yes, I think that's a really important point that he makes in the book in general. He says, I've always prided myself on making decisions over the quality of the decisions that I made. But he also says that a lot of his political colleagues agonise over their decisions and take forever looking at it up and down and left and right. But in the end of the day, he said, they don't make better decisions than he does. So sometimes just being decisive is a good thing.
Now, it's interesting, given he had so much to do with the economy in those early days and subsequently, as we know, with the programmes for economic development. But he was self-educated in that regard.
He was extraordinary. I mean, he left school at 16 after the Easter Rising. His father wanted him to go and study to be a solicitor, and he didn't do that. But he was tremendously self-educated. In fact, Sean Haughey, his son-in-law, was telling me he has a list at home when he would send his son-in-law, Charles Haughey, to go and buy a load of books for him in his shop. And there were everything from history to economics to politics. He was a real autodidact. Right?
And, but when he was in prison in the early days, he was reading and quoting manuals, and annoying people with his knowledge.
He was an extraordinarily well self-educated and very well educated.
Now, he also talks about politicians. You know, the brightest politicians, the most intellectual, the cleverest, are not necessarily the best. Why?
Well, he says that there was a sort of ardent simplicity he felt about De Valera, or a lack of sophistication. But he said that was the way that De Valera connected with the Irish people. And he says, I don't have that ability. My son-in-law, he said at the time, Charles Haughey, doesn't have that ability. But he said sometimes the perception of simplicity really draws people to a politician. Whereas if you come across as being too clever, you're never going to connect with the public in the same way.
This, of course, would be the classic Jack Lynch never came across, even though he was a solicitor, never came across as too clever by now. And whereas Charlie Haughey did.
He also mentions about Harold Wilson coming across as too clever as well, a guy who felt there was no problem beyond him. And he has very, very interesting observations about politicians in general, which I think are universal in this book.
Now, the other thing, he was a European long before his time. Yes. I mean, you remarked that he agreed with Charles de Gaulle that Europe needed to develop an independent defence and could not depend on the US indefinitely. And so we see today.
When you read some of the stuff in this book, he was so extraordinarily prescient about so many things, particularly about Europe. He says in the book that, you know, that the British were never really committed to the common market. They were always, they were basically imperialists. They still had the imperialist hangover. They saw themselves as an Atlantist nation rather than a European one. But he says in the book as well about that Europe has to develop its own defence, its own independent defence return. This is at a time when de Gaulle was, or had taken, I think, France out of NATO, because he basically did not want to depend on on the United States for French security.
He had another kind of mantra, I suppose. If you're not annoying anyone, you're doing something wrong.
That's right. He would always say that. It was quite funny. He talked about the fact that if there weren't a few protests outside the Ardèche, you're doing something wrong. Because if you're the worst thing to be in politics is to be ignored. And he was talking about Fine Gael. This is when they were in opposition. Never had any protests outside the Ardèche simply because people didn't care what they thought about anything.
Yeah. Now, is it fair to attribute modern Ireland to Sean Lamass?
I think so. I think he began the process, but the process had begun really with the inter-party government or the in the 50s. There was a realization towards the end of the 1950s that things couldn't go on the way they went on. I think he was definitely the driving force behind the first economic program, behind the end of protectionism and so on. And yes, I do think in a lot of ways, certainly economically, he was the forerunner of the modern Irish state that we have today.
Well, the book is brilliant. It's called Sean Lamass, subtitled The Lost Memoir, edited by Ronan McGreevy, published by IRU. And Ronan, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.
Always a pleasure, Pat. Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.